Menace Nation, it's Menace Morning Time.
Wake 'em up.
I don't do the most, but I do a lot.
Tryna hide from the camera.
I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big.
Couldn't find our tick. So I'm drinking on Accutane.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma pull up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the rain.
I shoot a shot. I'm coming in.
I'ma take it to trial. Pray the Lord I beat the case. That man be calling.
Is Monday, April 25th. Welcome to Menace at Lunch. I need a new graphic, Chris. We got to get a new graphic. It says Menace Morning, and we're now a lunchtime show.
Oh, yeah.
So I got to fix that. But, man, I'm excited. It's draft week. It is draft week. And the NFL draft is like nothing else just because these kids have worked their whole life, have been great players, making all kinds of money for universities, and now they finally get to get theirs. Remember, they did not have NIL deals. Garrett Wilson has made $0 in his football career. And now he will go out and become a millionaire on Thursday. It's so cool to watch. So obviously in the draft preview, we had to start with my bread and butter because it was easy, right? We want to evaluate quarterbacks, evaluate running backs. That's going to take some more work. I'm going to have to watch, really study film, but I want to talk about the receiver position. And I watched all these kids and man, this is a talented ass receiver class. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there's legitimately five first rounders by my book. And then a bunch that are projected first rounders that are not, but that's neither here nor there. That's the NFL for you. So we do want to talk about it. We're going to break down the receiver class. Want to mention also, if you're out in Vegas, if you're planning on going to Vegas for the draft, go to Sapphire Gentlemen's Club on Thursday and you can buy a package. It's a badass sports bar with strippers. You can't beat it, right? Huge 100-inch TV screens. They're having a big draft party for the first round and after an after party with T.O. Terrell Owens is hosting the after party. So it'll be celebrity star-studded. So go Google them. Go to their website. I didn't bring it on the show because this is not technically even an ad read. I'm just mentioning it because it is draft week, right? And they did put an advertisement on the show twice. So we will continue to promote them because we appreciate them. And everybody appreciates a good gentleman's club.
Absolutely. Never been to one, but.
Well, I mean, even the girls that are trying to pay their way through college, like right. even them, they appreciate the employment. But a lot to talk about. Also, big news, Andre Turpentine, I've never heard of him. He is in the transfer portal for Ohio State, getting their number down to 85. Chris, you had a funny prospect breakdown from some of the recruiting gurus out there. Tell us about Andre Turpentine.
And I remember Turpentine. That's funny because I think Buddy's is a decent football player. But when he committed, he was outside of the top 200 players. And he was outside of the top 10 safeties at the time. And I remember when he committed, I had concerns watching him. I didn't think he was super explosive. Thought he was a little bit undersized. Didn't know how rangy he was to be a free safety. And it's crazy because as soon as he committed, all these writers, Zach, they kept comparing him to one player, Von Bell. I don't want to call him out, but they five, at least
who
three,
did it?
Probably five. Man, I saw some Givler, some Gleitman, some this, some that. So three different sites. Said, honestly, I see some Von Bell in him. And I'm like, whoa, wait a sec. Whoa.
It's always how it works, right?
It's insane.
A recruit's coming out. You'll see it with the NFL draft. Drake London is just like Calvin Johnson. You're like, shut the fuck. What?
It's like, what are we doing?
Every safety is either Von Bell or Malik Hooker. They all are, right?
And coming out of high school, Von Bell was a freak, dog. Like,
oh, my God. He was the number one safety in the country on anyone's board. It was us and Bama at the end. Like that, he was an absolute freak of nature, and just a great player. Great player. But that's
how. And you see,
in two years, there'll be a 6'3" safety coming out, and he is the next Josh Proctor, right? It's assuming Josh Proctor has the year I think he will have this year. That's just how it works. That's just what they do.
Every big safety with a little hit stick in him is going to be the next Josh Proctor. It's insane. It's insane. I was actually shocked when that kind of, but I'm not shocked he's in the portal because we hear all about little Jimmy, little this, little that. Everybody's an All-American on all these sites, and obviously you talk to coaches, so you know the deal. And even though everybody is an All-American, everybody's a player, we never heard Andre's name a single time on the sites, through coaches, through anything. So that's just That just it is what it is. And he's out, and you know, Noah Potter is out as well. He obviously wasn't going to be able to crack the rotation. We're about eight deep at defensive line. Even though we rotate, he wasn't in the top eight. So I see him going somewhere and being a good player. Someone made a joke that he looks like he's ready for Cincinnati, looks like he's ready for Notre Dame. I'm getting fried in the chat. It's Monday. Hey, they're cooking me.
If you're watching this video live or afterwards, fry Chris in the chat. That's what we're here for. That's why we switched to a video podcast, just so you could fry Chris. I think the best one I've seen is Chris Drew be looking like a pre-puberty KJ Hill.
Not KJ Hill.
Lynn's Breezy is sticking up for you, Chris, in the chat.
I love my women of Buckeye Nation.
But that is what spring is for, right? You read all the spring updates, the nuggets that drop, and it's like Noah Potter's having an outstanding spring. Andre Turpentine is having an outstanding spring. Mm-hmm. And all the kids that are having outstanding springs jump in a portal. It's wild.
Just get him out of here.
Bryson Shaw to USC, which that'll be interesting because I think Bryson Shaw is a talented player. He was just so undercoached, underdeveloped. I think he's got a chance to be a really good player, and he saw the writing on the wall. He knew Josh Proctor was going to be one. They bring in Tanner McAllister, and you know, they start developing some of these young kids, and he sees that, you know, he's probably maybe the third safety, and he's like, no, I want to be the top safety. And so he goes to USC. So this is one of those, it's like a Jameson Williams transfer where I could see it working out for him, USC and Ohio State, where everyone's happy. The kid goes on to become a great player at USC, you know, credits Ohio State. Cause he did start all year once Josh Proctor got hurt. And it'll be interesting to see how Buckeye fans, you know, talk about it.
Yeah. Well, here's where I'm at with Shaw. If Shaw ends up being a good player, I am going to drive to Cincinnati and dump Legos all over Kerry Coombs' floor. And hopefully he steps on one and experiences pain. Because if Bryson Shaw ends up being a player, I'm going to be hurt because I was one of the guys that said that I wasn't sure he could play. So, of course, he's been reunited with Grinch, who recruited him out of high school. To come on. And if you're Shaw, honestly, what to me I think was the last straw, was watching Kai. Like, Kai was out there absolutely balling. And as soon as he does that, flashes a little bit, there is now there's no place for him on the team. So I do think it's intriguing. I mean, I think that's three safeties in the portal or two safeties in the portal already. And honestly, I think this is Knowles is probably having to talk with him because Knowles is, you know, he considers himself a safety expert and a linebacker expert. So we're seeing the safeties get out of town now, and next I think the linebackers will. And these are guys that he didn't recruit, and it's like NFL front offices. It's like, you know, it's Chief Wiz. They're killing me, Zach.
Oh, hey, just keep flying Chris in the chat. We'll try to keep him on task. Don't worry about it. You can't offend him.
No.
Chris is Cuba Gooding Jr.'s long lost, neglected son.
They thought they saw me in Columbus last weekend, but it was a junkie. What am I, Jesse Pinkman? Yeah, bitch.
But anyways,
Anyways.
You know, it'll be interesting to see. But let's talk about this receiver draft class, and I'm gonna give you my thoughts just kind of on where everyone fits, where I could see them going. And I do want to say on the front end, I do think, and this is, you know, call it bias, whatever. I actually like, this is not just me spouting off my opinion based on what I watched this season. Like, I actually spent all weekend and all morning studying these kids, studying game tapes, studying highlight tapes, and what I walked away from it saying is the best three receivers in this class all were recruited to Ohio State. Mm-hmm. Jameson Williams is one, Garrett Wilson two, Chris Olave three. That is just how I have them ranked. If I had to say where they will fall, I think that because Jameson tore his ACL, he slips behind Garrett. I think Garrett goes 8 to Atlanta, Jameson 10 to the Jets, Olave 15 to Green Bay. But I think when you look at it, they're very similar builds, right? They're all 6'6", 6'1". They're all around 180 pounds. Chris Olave is actually the biggest of the three at 187 at the combine. They all ran. I mean, Jameson didn't run, but he's a low 4.3. He's faster than those two kids. And those two kids all went sub 4.4. I mean, you look at their broad jumps, which is, I've always said, broad jumps is the greatest evaluator of explosion, because vertical's fun. You're fighting gravity. The broad jump, the horizontal jump is far greater translator of explosion. And all of them, I mean, Garrett was 10-3, Chris Olave was 10-4. So those three I have as my top three. The next receiver that everyone's talking about, Chris, and I'll let you kind of give your rundown after I talk about this kid, is Drake London. Everyone wants to talk about USC's Drake London. He's a bigger receiver. He is a, you know, ball skill, 50-50 contested catch receiver. But as I watch his film, I just don't see NFL talent. I really don't. I think he has hands. He does a good job making contested catches, but the kid never gets open, ever. And then this whole drama of not, you know, he broke his ankle late in the season, right? Jameson Williams tore his ACL late in the season, and Jameson's out there doing drills. Jameson's doing everything. Right. Drake London goes out, and he did full, first of all, didn't do anything at the combine but interviews. That's fine. Then they go to pro day. He's still not ready. So he pushes his personal pro day back 10 days after USC's pro day. Didn't participate in USC's pro day. Made all these scouts fly out to his pro day and went through full position drills. And I watched them all. I mean, he looked pretty decent. Run, I mean, change of direction drills, cone drills, top end drills. And just he is running full speed and cutting on a broken ankle. But he didn't run a 40. Why? There's only one answer. It's not because his ankle wasn't healthy enough. He did full-on change of direction drills. If his ankle wasn't healthy enough, he would have scrapped those and just ran the 40. But he didn't run the 40 because what it looks like on film is a reality. He's a 4.7 kid. That's what he is. He's not low 4.6. He's not 4.5. He is a 4.7 kid, and he knew that if he ran high 4.6, low 4.7, he would plummet. His draft stock would plummet, and the NFL is too stupid to realize that. Someone will take him in the first round because he was getting covered by San Jose State and he made a jump ball catch. That's why they will draft him. He's a big, good-looking kid, smart kid. You can tell he talks well. You can tell he's a smart kid. The only other thing that bothers me is his football. I don't know his football IQ, but I will tell you this. In USC's offense, they play right and left receivers. So the kid has only played on the left side of the field his entire year. He was the left receiver. And that just tells me that one, he hasn't played the right side, and that will be a foreign concept to him, putting his other foot up and planting off those other feet. And also, they don't teach football. Mm-hmm. Those offenses that play right-left receivers, they are doing that because it's all go fast, kind of run routes, and it's not. They don't teach the finer details. They don't teach defensive recognition. They don't teach that stuff. They're just simply trying to go fast and trying to catch you off guards and get you winded. And it's not. They don't teach you real football.
It's a transition to seven. It's like 7-on-7 football for wide receivers translates into right left.
Yeah, and you look at another receiver that obviously, now this is going to kind of counter my point, but another receiver that was like that was Mike Evans. Mike Evans went to the NFL, and they never looked at the defense. They just ran their routes, and the quarterback knew where to go based on the coverage, and the receivers never learned shit. Never one time did they hear about a cloud corner, a man corner, a bail corner, none of that. They didn't teach them that because their philosophy was we run these concepts, and the quarterback figures out where to go with the ball. If you're a receiver, it doesn't really matter. What coverage it is to you?
Yeah, it's tricky. I think, damn it, I don't like bashing kids, Zach, but I do worry. I remember
these are grown men about to be professionals.
You're right. You and I texted about the Ballard kid from Ohio State, and we kind of referenced that he couldn't get open, and I thought it looked like it was stuff to do with the top of his routes, maybe not processing information, which is super important for a receiver and doesn't get talked about enough. I think that Drake London is more Hakeem Butler, the kid from Iowa State a couple years ago, than he is DK Metcalf.
Oh, God, he's not even close.
Well, that's where I'm at. And it's because Hakeem Butler, 6'6", contested catches, you know, at Iowa State, put up some big numbers, made some contested, like he did a really good job. And he was a man against boys, but he couldn't generate separation. And I see in the comments, run after the catch is the best quality for a receiver in the NFL. No. Being able to create separation is the first thing you have to do. Because guess what you can't do if you don't have separation? You can't create yards after catch if you have zero separation. And Brian Harlan alluded to it months ago. Remember, Zach? He sent that tweet out. It's like, well, our guys don't have contested catches because our guys can actually get open. Mm-hmm. And I'm shocked the NFL hasn't kind of gotten there yet. He's not DK. I didn't think DK was a great route runner, but DK was fast, like fast as shit. And I think that Drake London probably runs in the 4.6s. I don't think he's 4.7s. And he's not a good enough route runner to be anything better than that. And it's interesting because Michael Pittman, Zach, played for USC, same time Drake London did a couple years ago. And Michael Pittman, to me, was a much better prospect, but wasn't a round one receiver.
So, well, I don't think Drake London is a round one receiver. He'll get drafted in the first round. There's some mock drafts that have him first off the board, and I honestly question who the fuck is watching this film because the kid is a good player. I'm not saying he's not a good player. He belongs in the NFL. He will find a role. He might be, you know, one of those mid-tier NFL receivers, but he's not a top flight receiving prospect. He's not. Those three we just mentioned, Olave, Garrett, and Jameson, all have a chance to be impact NFL receivers. They do. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, as we see in the draft, the chances that all three become Terry McLaurin or Michael Thomas is very low. That doesn't happen often that you go 3 for 3 on your top three receivers on the board. But the guy that I actually like better than Drake London is Treylon Burks out of Arkansas, coming out of high school, big time recruit. He's more now he's a sub 4'6 kid at 6'2, 225.
He's got more polish.
He's a better route runner. And I know the coach, I know the guy that recruited him, and I know his coaches, and he's been coached. He's been developed. He has decent change of direction for a 6'2, 225 kid. His biggest issue is going to be staying in that low 220 range, because if he gets much bigger, he's going to lose a step, and he can't do that.
You can't lose a step, no.
So I like Treylon Burks more than him, but my guy that I guess people are kind of talking about him, but they're not giving him the respect he deserves, is North Dakota State's Christian Watson. Holy shit. You watch that kid's film, I don't care who he's playing against. If I was an NFL GM, I would take him in the upper half of the first round. I mean, this kid's 6'4", 208, 10-inch hands, 10 1/8-inch hands, big hands. This sumbitch ran a 4.36 at 6'4", 4.36, almost a 39-inch vert and an 11.4 broad jump. And guess what? That's all good. Testing, combine warriors are great. This fucker's film, it backs it up. And he's not just a go route receiver. Granted, he got open on a shitload of go routes, because if you're 4.36 at North Dakota State, you're going to run by pretty much everyone you play. But he's taking jet sweeps, running slants. He's actually routing people up. He's got good hips. He's fluid. He, in my opinion, he's the guy to challenge the three Ohio State kids. You can call Jameson an Alabama player if you want, but you know who I mean. Mm-hmm. I think that's the kid who pushes those three kids. And if an NFL team has some fucking awareness and gets this kid in one-on-one workouts, I think he's a top half first round pick. I really do.
Do you like him more than you like David Bell?
Oh my God. That's not even close.
Do you like him more than Dotson?
Yes. I think I think Jahan Dotson's a third rounder. I do. He'll probably go in the second round, but I think he's a third rounder. He ran 4.4, which is great. He made some big catches against Ohio State. He showed me that he is an NFL player, but I don't think he is that top flight NFL starter. I think he's a wide receiver three in the NFL.
What about Pickens? Pickens, 200 pounds, 6'3". He ran in the fours. I mean,
George Pickens. I like
Pickens a lot.
I mean, I like the ball of clay. What you don't know is you didn't see him dominate anyone, mainly because he had fucking Stetson Bennett. He had me throwing to him.
And he was injured. And he was injured as well.
And he was injury plagued his whole time at Georgia. Mm-hmm. And I think that'll be a major concern. So he'll definitely slip in the draft, maybe second round. But I think he at least has a ball of clay, where Drake London, I don't think, has those skills. I don't think he has the speed and acceleration to, like you said, get separation. I think George Pickens has those skills. He just needs to be polished up, and he needs to stay healthy.
Yeah, no, I agree. I like Pickens a lot, and I resonate with Pickens, given kind of the era that I fell in love with Ohio State football. Like, I mean, you had some – Michael Thomas was a really good receiver, didn't have the production – mainly because of the quarterback and the offense. And that's what we saw from Pickens. And I in my heart of hearts, believe that if JT Daniels stays or wins the job at any point, I think that Pickens and Burton both return to Georgia. And I think they both left because Stetson Bennett said he's coming back for another year, because obviously he's not an NFL prospect. And then they're like, well, we can either transfer or test our luck in the league right now. I think Pickens is a really good player. I haven't seen it done before, where a guy is like basically zero production in college and then goes at the receiver position and goes and is a good one. But if I'm the Browns at 44, I give it a long look.
Absolutely.
Really, really long look. If you feel like you need receivers and you feel like you can, you know, take the time and trust your development and your staff. Now, Kerryon Conley talked to us on a couple spaces about the NFL is not very development oriented. It's like, you better come in and you develop on your own time, come learn the scheme on our time.
Hey, well, hey, you all know what to do. At that man, I will train his ass off. I will get him ready.
At Pickens, at George Pickens, come to Columbus. I mean,
I'll fly to Atlanta. Where you at, George?
Yeah, George. Let's get some Atlanta, work in. But if he ends up getting drafted by the Browns, guess where he'll be? You can stay at my house. You can stay at the crib. Mom's place. We got a big crib. But the rule is, once you step foot in the house, you can't get a haircut for 8 months. So.
Oh yeah, well, that ain't happening. You see, I cut my I shave my head every 3 days, so that
not a lot. Not now,
now that we're on camera, I got to do it every two. But I got fried this weekend, if you can't tell. Chris, I spent 7 straight hours in the sun on Saturday. It was 85 degrees. I had a 10-year-old softball practice that I coached, a 4-year-old soccer game, a 12-year-old baseball practice, and I trained two big-time recruits that Ohio State's recruiting. I'm not going to tell details, but I trained two prospects that Ohio State's recruiting after that. And just to one to help coach them, but also to get a kind of give an eval, I would say.
Okay,
to,
yeah, not, that's just that's
nothing,
a
nothing illegal. That's a nothing illegal.
Yeah, no, definitely heard that. I want to stay on the receivers talk, Zach, because I am curious. Mechie is super intriguing to me. I don't know where you stand on him because I'm not sure he's good enough to be a one or
no, he's not
two. I wonder if there's a place for him if you've seen enough for him to be an every down slot guy.
You know, he reminds me a lot of KJ Hill.
Yeah.
I think he definitely has a role in the NFL. I think he's a wide receiver three, good possession receiver, third down guy, you know, reliable, doesn't drop the ball, gets open, gets some separation, but he's not a dominant player and going to go be, you know, your alpha, your wide receiver one. But he definitely has a role. He's honestly another guy he reminds me of is a very different body, but Noah Brown. Noah Brown's going into like his 7th year with the Cowboys, and he plays a ton. He's probably their wide receiver four.
You can't cut him. You literally can't cut him.
He's just too good of a player.
Right, exactly.
And he's reliable. He gets open. He catches the ball really well. And I think that's what John Mechie is. I think he is valuable. There's value there in the third round, maybe. Maybe even late second, to have a guy that you know is going to be well-coached, and he's going to come in and he's going to learn the offense. He's going to get open and he's going to catch the ball. He's not going to dominate anybody in man coverage, but on third down, he can provide some things for you.
Yeah. It's really interesting because like when I watch Mechie, and I've tried to go back and watch a lot because obviously I pay very close attention to the Browns. The radio station I work for is partners with the Browns. So a lot of the coverage that we do in the same building is Browns related. One of the things that I keep looking at is receivers in later rounds that there's some value with. And to me, you can totally blow me out if you don't see it. But to me, Mechie feels like a receiver that if he gets with one of these like in rhythm quarterbacks, is going to end up at some point having a 70 catch season. Like the same way with Tom Brady, like those slot guys work out, the guys that are well coached, sure hands, and do the right thing. It just feels like he'll go somewhere if he has the right quarterback. That's well, on timing. Like if he went to the Broncos when they had Teddy Bridgewater, it feels like a guy that would just have a lot of catches because it's easy access stuff.
And yeah, well, I mean, Mechie's going to be a receiver that his situation where he's drafted to is going to dictate his entire career. If he goes to the wrong place, he's going to kind of fizzle out and be out of the NFL and you won't ever hear from him again. If he goes to the right place, he could be a really productive NFL receiver and hang on for 6 years. You know, it's just all about fit. Mm-hmm. If you're not one of those top flight players, right? Like Terry McLaurin went to Washington, horrible fit, but he's so good that he was still productive and he's making a career for himself, right? And you know, he was obviously not a first rounder, but in my opinion, he should have been. And I guess his NFL play is showing that he should have been. But I think situations dictate so much of your success, especially at receiver, because literally, and Joey Galloway and I talked about this, you know, whatever it was, 8 years ago, his career, how there's so much circumstance with who the quarterback is, what throws can he make, how's the offensive line and pass pro, can you run those deeper routes that you need to run to maintain integrity on a go route, right? Because you have to be able to run an 18-yard comeback or some kind of 18-yard route so that DBs just don't turn and run when you hit 12 yards, right? You have to run those routes and quarterbacks have to throw them and O-lines have to protect for them. And if they don't, your repertoire is limited and now you're stuck. You know, maybe you don't have the production. All of a sudden they're like, oh, he's not any good. And it's just circumstantial. But that is the NFL. The NFL is a circumstantial league.
Yeah. I'm of the belief that the wide receiver position, especially going to the NFL, I think that types of receivers matter. There's guys that are home run hitters, and there's guys that are security blankets. And my belief has always been when your security blanket starts hitting home runs, that's when you enter the very upper echelon of receiver play. Yeah. And more often than not, it ends up being a guy that's not a home run hitter starting to hit home runs rather than a home run hitter that becomes a security blanket. Now, with guys that are dynamic and home run hitters, I think they can overcome bad circumstances more than a security blanket can. And I think we've seen that before. And I think Terry McLaurin, he's so dynamic that because even though the quarterback play was bad, he's so dynamic that if he gets one or two shots a game, he's going to make somebody pay. But guys that are timing guys, heavy catch guys, like guys that, you know, probably are one of the best receivers in the league, but you don't get to see it until they get a timing quarterback. I think that's like my example is Cooper Kupp. I don't think Cooper Kupp took a huge step all of a sudden as soon as Jared Goff was gone and became more of a finished product, got faster, stronger, better route runner. I think Jared Goff just wasn't very good.
Yeah.
So Cooper Kupp looked good, not great. You got him with someone who's elite. It's like, oh, wait, no. Or a really good quarterback. It's like, oh, no. He's great. Jared Goff was holding him back.
Yeah.
So I think that it is circumstantial, but I do think there's certain players that are so much over, like so much better than everybody else that it's like, oh, you can see it. And Terry's definitely one of them. I think if Terry gets a quarterback sack, if they get it figured out over there and it sticks and they get just decent O-line play and decent wide quarterback play, I think Terry's a guy that gets you 1,500 yards in a season.
Oh, he definitely is.
Easy. And yeah, I think definitely. That he has a chance to be one of kind of the three or four best receivers in football. And honestly, it's funny because of Brand, Zach. I mean, his first 3 years in the league were better than DK Metcalf's. Yards per catch, catches, touchdown, all better. The difference is DK was playing winning football because he had a winning quarterback.
Yeah, he had Russ. Mm-hmm. That just is what it is. I think my other problem with all this draft content is just the narrative stuff they drive, right? Like the Tyquan Thornton kid from Baylor that ran 4.28. Now all of a sudden they're gonna talk him up like he's a first round receiver. He's not. I watched his film. He just
John Ross.
I mean, we've seen it over and over again. The NFL for some reason won't learn from their mistakes. And the other kid is the Sky Moore kid from Western Michigan. I mean, he's a good player in the MAC, like really good MAC player, but he's not an NFL player. And they want to make him out to be Corey Davis so bad because he has that fucking Bronco in his helmet and he's better than everyone else in the MAC. They want to act like he's an NFL player. And it's like he's a fourth round guy. You watch his film. He's at best a fourth rounder. He'll probably go in the second round, though. And it's just like, you can waste a pick if you want to. I have fun. I hope it's not my Browns.
22 years old and dominating the MAC. Like it took you till you're 22 to dominate the MAC. Like, I don't know. More power to him. I think he's going to play. I just don't see it. He's only 5'10". I don't know if he can. I don't. He's not better than David Bell to me. So
no, he's not. He's not. Hey. And the other two that aren't really talked about a lot. One is Justin Ross, and I know he's been hurt. He had the neck issue, had all these issues, but people forget how good he was his first year on the field at Clemson. He was really good, and so he's a guy that if he stays healthy, he could turn into a nice prospect later in the draft, simply because of injury concerns. And you know what that. You take a flyer on a kid like that and just pray he stays healthy. And if he does, you get incredible value in the third round with a Justin Ross. And the other guy's Bo Melton at Rutgers that kind of, you know, he's a good player. We'll just call him a good player.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I mean, honestly, Zach, like I do want to ask you about the Jets pick at number 10. Cause it's kind of being dangled as trade bait at this point.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Niners are dealing with Debo. Debo wants to be just a wide receiver, not quite a running back and a wide receiver. He wants $35 million. Maybe it says something about Trey Lance. Maybe Trey Lance isn't as good as, you know, once advertised and he wants out before his value diminishes. And the belief is that number 10 pick could be in play come draft night. And obviously, if the 49ers trade away their number one receiver, what do they have a need for? Receiver. Yeah. And there... Who do you like there for Kyle Shanahan? Because obviously the NFL is so situational and there's such different skill sets. Do you like – now here's what I know. Maybe I don't know, but I would bet a lot of money that Kyle Shanahan doesn't touch Drake London. I don't think that he fits anything he needs. He needs guys that are very efficient with movements, guys that can play every single receiver position. And obviously he likes the smaller, quicker guys, the faster guys.
Yeah.
And he's not
– I think either Garrett or Olave, whoever's on the board still, because I think Atlanta's going to make a move for one of those three, whether it's Jameson or Chris or Garrett. I think whoever's available of those three, you take right there at, what is it, 10?
Yep, 10.
I mean, I think those three kids warrant a top 10 pick. You might not need to spend one on them because they might fall to 15, but I think if you take either Chris, Garrett, or Jameson, you know, in that 6 to 15 range, that is a value pick. Like that is a solid choice, and they got a chance to come in and make an impact right away in the right system, like you said, with the right quarterback. I mean, God only knows what's going to happen in San Fran. But with Debo leaving, they're going to need a guy. Now, none of those guys are going to be able to do what Debo did, you know, that hybrid role. But
firmly disagree.
Huh?
Firmly disagree.
You think that you could hand the ball to any of those three kids and run stretch?
Never mind. I do agree.
I was like, what? They absolutely cannot do that.
I was thinking about the sweep stuff with Garrett. I think Garrett's that talented.
Yeah, you could run a speed sweep, but you could do that with a ton of receivers. I'm talking about running actual run plays. None of those three kids are going to do it. I mean, you could toss them the ball or hand them the ball on some sweep stuff. Yeah, absolutely. You could throw them bubbles. You could do all that shit, and they'll be dynamic with it. But you're not handing Jameson inside zone. Fuck. He'll get fucking crumbled. But I think that's a smart pick for them at 10.
I think if Garrett goes there, I think he immediately becomes one of the 8 best receivers in football. If Trey Lance can do the things that 49ers.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the absolute dream pick for Kyle Shanahan if they get rid of Debo is Garrett Wilson at 10. I just don't think he's going to be there.
Yeah, well, one can hope and dream, and maybe they can package 10 and Garoppolo to move up a little more. Here's Garoppolo, just last point on kind of draft stuff before we move on to college football stuff. I think Garoppolo will only be there if something goes drastically wrong. I think that they want it to be Trey Lance. They know how NFL's like the NFL's structured like this. If your quarterback's on a rookie deal and your number one receiver's on a rookie deal, you can put so much money into other places and make Super Bowl runs. The prime example is the Bengals. I mean,
yeah.
Joe Burrow, rookie deal. Obviously, Chase, rookie deal. They're dynamic. They were really good. Jared Goff on his rookie deal made a Super Bowl. Jared fucking Goff, man, made a Super Bowl on a rookie deal because when you don't have to pay that quarterback $30 million, you can spend everywhere. Everyone was looking at the Rams like, whoa, are they running? Do they have an NBA, you know, salary cap? Because they're paying everybody. Right. Well, you could do that when your top weapon and your top, your quarterback are. So that's what the Niners want to do, and they're going to try to get there. Zach, did you watch any spring football? Do you have anything else you want to hit on the NFL stuff before I ask you about spring football over the weekend?
No, that's kind of my thoughts on the receiver position, where everyone falls, and I'm just excited to watch it. Mainly because I know intimately three of the kids that'll be drafted and watch their dreams become a reality. So it's going to be really fun. Thursday's going to be an awesome night.
It's gonna be really incredible, and I'm excited. I do want to ask, I just real quick, we talked briefly about Clemson last week about like who has the chance of overcoming them in the ACC, but I wanted to kind of broaden that conversation just real briefly and get your thoughts on it. Mm-hmm. College football's changing. Obviously, it's becoming the Wild West. It's becoming like the Purge movie where crime is now legal. And I don't think Clemson survives this. Now, nationally, I think the pillars of college football could be changing. And I think that right now, my tier one is Alabama, Georgia, and Ohio State. I had Clemson there because those are the teams that were in the playoffs most years in the top of the world. I have Clemson going down, and I think that there are some new pillars that could be formed. And I want to ask you who you think is the most likely to be that fourth pillar of college football, because I think there's important for there to be four. I think there has always been four or more. Texas, there's a lot of hope down there with Quinn Ewers. He threw a couple darts, a couple dimes in spring game. I know you were laughing about it, having fun. I think he's Tom Brady, to be honest. Like, I honestly fit him for the gold jacket now. In fact, make it burnt orange. You make it the Quinn Ewers Award, as far as I'm concerned. Nice. USC had record attendance, 3,000 people at their spring game. And they have high hopes for Caleb Williams and company. Those are the two that I think are right on the cusp of maybe being there or have the most potential. Notre Dame, they're getting the alumni base involved. You've talked in great lengths about how big time their alumni base is. Are one of those three teams going to be that fourth pillar, or is it going to be somebody else?
Well, it's a wide open race right now, right? And if you had to pick one, it would be USC because the Pac-12 is so bad. They have a quarterback who's shown he can be a dynamic player. Lincoln Riley has done it, right? He's put Oklahoma in the playoffs. So that is the leading candidate, right, to be that fourth kind of mainstay in the playoff conversation. Texas, certainly, if Quinn Ewers is as advertised, will be that other option, maybe that fifth option. And then I think that the problem with the Notre Dames and Miamis of the world is, do they have a quarterback, right? Because you need to have a quarterback.
That's how you accelerate this with a quarterback.
I mean, that's what everyone has had outside of Georgia, who had a ridiculous defense that we haven't really seen in the last decade. Other than that one team, every team that's made a run at the national championship has had high level quarterback play. So is Quinn Ewers that? We don't know yet. He's certainly talented. He might be. And then the Notre Dame is a complete wild card. They don't have a quarterback where you're saying, oh, that kid might be the best quarterback in the country.
And they don't have a history of developing quarterbacks either.
They don't have a history of quarterbacks. I mean, since Brady Quinn, like, who's their quarterback?
I don't know, man. You know, Ian Book don't lie. I want to, you know, convert a little bit. What's going to stop USC? You told me why you think they'll get there, but what if it does not work out, if they do not become the fourth pillar, what stops them?
Well, this is still a rebuild, right? This is still a rebuild. They still aren't as talented as Alabama or Ohio State or even Texas when it comes to skill players, when it comes to, you know, their defense. I mean, they're not there yet, and it's probably going to take at least a year. And I know Oklahoma didn't have a killer defense, but Alex Grinch is one of the best defensive minds and coordinators that I've been around ever. And so I believe he will get them there. I just don't know if it's going to be like an 8-month fix.
Okay. That's fair. Now, what's going to stop Texas?
Similar issues, right? It was a complete rebuild. The culture is a fucking train wreck. Their defensive culture has not been very dominant. Sark is an offensive mind. Their defense was average last year. So I think that if they have that quarterback in Quinn Ewers that everyone thinks they could have, they have Bijan Robinson. They have some skill at receiver.
They have Worthy and a Jay Hall. I think they can have one of the more potent offenses in football.
There's no doubt. And don't count out Marcus Washington. He's a kid I recruited extremely hard out of St. Louis in that Jameson Williams kind of class. And he's a really talented player. And they have a bunch of them. They have a bunch of talented skill players. So it's really going to come down to their defense. And is Quinn Ewers as advertised?
It's really interesting. I think that Sark is in the weirdest spot out of everybody because Texas is huge. Obviously, I think there's more pressure on him to win sooner than there is on Lincoln Riley to win sooner. But I could be wrong on that. Additionally, Sark has to get this program on solid footing because it's only going to get harder.
Yeah.
Because and I mean, they're going to the SEC.
Well, and from the outside looking in, Texas looks to still have cultural issues, and that's the hardest shit to fix. USC, I think, is invigorated right now because they feel like they have this guy that's going to take them back to Pete Carroll days, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to bring them back to relevancy, the fight on, the V, everything. So I think USC has bought in, and Texas, it looks like they're still trying. They're still trying to get buy-in from the team, right? There's certainly players bought in. There's leaders. But I think success is going to come with that.
Well,
shout out Block O over here, man. The $50 super chat. This is not for the haircut fund. Have drinks on me. We appreciate you, man. We will definitely do that.
Drinks on the Block O, not for the haircut fund. So I'm going to keep that one. It's cool. And you know, I am a Yankees fan. But my drinks will not end up on Guardians players. I don't know if you saw that over the weekend, Zach. Just absurd. Just absolutely absurd.
I've said this so many times, right? That the Indians would be a World Series contender and they would just wholesale the whole fucking team. And every time they did it, I'd be like, I'm done. I'm done with the Indians. I'm done with them forever. The good news is they're not the Indians anymore. So I'm out. The minute they changed their name to stupid ass Guardians, I was fucking gone. Done. Never going to be a fan again. Never going to watch a game. They lost a fan in me. Maybe it won't hurt them because no one else really cares, but I am done. I'm in free agency to find a baseball team. I'm thinking about going full on like fan bandwagon fanboy and going with the Dodgers or something like that.
Hey, somebody text Bond edits and let's make an edit. I'm committing too.
Right. I'm taking my talents elsewhere. TBD. Announcement date, June 15th.
End it with respect my decision. okay, so here's where I'm at with those final note on those two programs. I think USC is going to win quicker for a couple reasons. I think that they have it's easier to get talent there right now. Right now, Texas is being raided by Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia. They all go into Texas and get the best players. USC with Lincoln Riley being there will be more helpful. Additionally, looking at the conference, I think Lincoln Riley's going to be beating Dan Lanning for some time. I'm not sure how Sark will deal with Brent Venables, who seems to have that Oklahoma as kind of like their minimal step back, if that's possible. So that's kind of my big thing. And additionally, I don't know how Sark's going to hold up when they get to the SEC. Because when they get to the SEC, I mean, they could legitimately go 10-2 this year, Zach. And they get to the SEC and just get absolutely mollyrocked by everybody.
I mean, Texas is a much different beast, but you saw what's happened to Mizzou. I mean, they were just they were perfectly fine where they were, and they decided to make that jump. And it's like, holy shit, man, that dude talk about a bad deal. Yeah, I know, I get it. Your revenue share split is better, but you are gone from relevancy.
Best player since they came to the SEC was Drew Locke. So I mean, it's tough. Drew Locke. I just want to say, Drew Locke would have put up absurd numbers in the Big 12, like. Oh. Drew Locke would have been putting up absolutely jaw-dropping. I mean, he probably would have been the number one overall pick, if I'm being completely honest with you. Okay. Zach, I don't have anything else for today. I did want to ask you about Johnny Dixon. He's been balling. Do you see a road where he gets? Yeah, absolutely balling, man. I love Johnny.
Bro, he's one of my favorite kids I've ever recruited, coached. Or fuck, not even football. Just one of my favorite people to be around. Like, he's just such a
smile,
good kid.
Infectious smile. I love Johnny, man. I'm so happy to see him. Yeah, he's
great, man. Him and his wife, his two kids, like, great family, great people. His mom's the best. She's wild, but she's awesome. And just a great kid. And he's a deep kid. You know what I mean? He's not one of these shallow ass kids. Like, this kid loves photography. Like, he's not just some South Florida kid that plays football. Like, he's just,
he likes
awesome.
Anime, and that's got a special place in my heart.
But he is, it's good to see him out there balling, man. Good to see him playing. I hope he gets a shot in the NFL.
I think he's earned it. I mean,
or the USFL takes off, or the XFL. One of them becomes a solid thing, and that's a place where a guy like Johnny can go play football because he's talented. He's fun to watch. And, you know, I've enjoyed the USFL so far. We haven't talked about it much. There's some bad football being played at times, but like, that Johnny's team, New Orleans, is legit. They're beating the shit out of people.
They're taking names. Like, it's really real. The USFL, I'm rooting for Johnny Dixon's team, of course. But I did see the kid got cut for asking for pizza or some shit
like
that.
Yeah, that's fucking ridiculous.
That shit's super weird. But other than that, I think it's done well, and I hope that, one of those two things happens. I would like to see him back in the NFL because I think he can offer a team something. I mean, I thought he played so fast when he was in Ohio State. Like, I know he didn't run the fastest 40 time, but I felt when I watched, he was the fastest on the field.
He can fly. His football speed, it translates. He can flat fly.
Mm-hmm. He had the Jets, and I'm just watching him ball out there and smile is really, really made me happy. I did see that you put on the notes. All right, Zach, I didn't want to do this, but I did want to ask you, man. Buckeye scoop, dog. All the drama over there.
I don't know what's going on over there, man.
Do you have a take on it, dog? Because it's like, it looks like Nevada's beefing with Ryan Day.
I don't know. I mean, you know,
you talk about he doesn't care about the kids, and the Harry Miller story is a little bit iffy. There's like sources, non-sources, players, everyone that he said was balling is in the portal. Like, what's up?
I don't know. I mean, the guy has good intel. I mean, there's times where he breaks news, and it's like, people inside the Woody are like, how the fuck did he know that? So like, he has legitimate sources at times. Then other times he drops a nugget and you're like, that fucking was way wrong.
he dropped a nugget on a practice one time. And then I know Austin Ward tweeted there was no practice today, or the practice got moved to this evening.
Right. But I mean, you know, he's getting intel from people, and he might get told something, and the guy was wrong that told him it, but that guy, same guy, has been right a handful of times. So I don't really know. I don't know how it all works, but I know this: when antennas are raised, there's something there. Right. And inside the Woody, there are antennas that are raised when Nevada Buck says something. So that means he has intel on some level, right? Mm-hmm. Even if 70% of it, 50% of it is wrong, he's got 30 to 50% that's right. And, you know, you can look at it however you want. I don't know. Is it a blind squirrel finds a nut?
When he's right, he's really right.
Like, and like, detailed. Like, it's not like, hey, a safety did well. It's like, no. So-and-so, you know, broke his femur. And you're in four places. And they're like, how did he know it was in four places? It's like, well, he someone told him that knows.
He's like, his nuggets are like fishing with the uncle. It's like, oh, like how big was the fish? And it's like, oh, it was this big. Like they've nailed a lot of things early. And it's interesting, Zach. I wanted to ask you, do you remember there being a supervillain in the Ohio State beat writing when you were there? Because that's what he is. Nevada Buck is, but he's the supervillain.
Yeah, it's always been him. He's always been
the supervillain, you think?
Oh, yeah. He's always been the supervillain.
That's crazy, dog.
Crazy. It's wild.
And he
did it.
He never had credentials. Like, he was never at practice or anything.
Oh, no. No.
But now they're taking out on Kurt Barton. I mean, obviously, we know that he got, like, escorted. Like, just absolutely weird stuff.
Think a lot will come to light about Buckeye Scoop here in the next month, because there's a lot of stuff going on behind closed doors that with the drama that went on with Givler and Kirk and all that stuff. Which, you know, I know all about it, but I'm not here to report on it or break news or anything like that. But it will all come to a close soon, and a lot will get out, and people will see kind of the reality of what happened, whatever that is. I don't know exactly what happened, but I mean, it's all legal litigation at this point.
It feels like there's no good guys here, Zach. Like that, it just feels like there's no good guys. Like, this is the League of Villains. They got together, and
They're the villains of sports media in the Buckeye beat because they do it differently, right? Not that they're bad. I mean, I know a handful of them, and they're great guys. But it's just they're doing things a little different, and it's rattling some cages and shaking some people up.
They're like the mobster version of like reporters.
Yeah. So like, I'm here for it, man. You know me. I'm here for that shit.
It's me too. Like, so I work at the radio station and we have like this like code of ethics and like journalistic ethics on the wall. We look at it every day when we go into the building because, you know, you're supposed to do things the right way. We have a newsroom, yada, yada, yada. And then like some of the stories that I see like getting broke, like in my city, it's always from like these people that are just fucking gangsters. Like they don't care. Like yeah. there's no ethics. We want the story. We don't care how we get it. I mean, we'll press grandma to get a story. Like we don't care. And it's just, it's really interesting. But Zach, I have nothing else for today unless you want to hit this current NFL OSU.
No, I just want to mention it because I see this shit. People send me this shit all the time. And the only reason why I want to mention it is because this guy works for fucking ESPN. And just to further diminish any of you that are watching, like why you would turn the fucking station on. This guy, the Block Spot, who works at ESPN, put out a current all OSU NFL defense. And it's fine, right? The D-lines, Nick Bosa, Cam Hayward, John Hankins, and Chase Young. But the issue is this. His linebackers are Joey Bosa, John Simon, and Jerome Baker. Like, Joey Bosa and John Simon are fucking linebackers? Like, you can't do that. You can't play a defense with six D-linemen. Like, what the fuck is that? Goal line? Is it fourth and one from the one? Like, just the dumbest shit I've ever seen. And when people do this, it's like someone follows this guy. He works and gets a paycheck from ESPN. If that doesn't discredit their whole fucking operation and organization, outside of Disney and how shitbaggedness that Disney operates, I mean, it's just a fucking joke. ESPN is awful. And people that work there don't know shit. And so I just wanted to put it out there because someone sent it to me and I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? An ESPN employee is putting out an all-time defense, has six D linemen on it. Does he even fucking know that those guys play D line and they can't play linebacker? Like, Joey Bosa cannot play linebacker. What are we talking about?
Nah, this dude's never played football before. I don't even know if he's ever watched football before. It's ridiculous. But I kind of started ignoring the Sam Block stuff just because he's just throwing stuff at a wall and seeing what goes viral. And it's working. Like, more power to him, but that shit's lame.
We're talking about it, right?
Right, we are.
But I'm talking about it to say unfollow that motherfucker and turn off ESPN.
Unfollow. Well, if we have to start going longer to get you guys away from ESPN, we will. But Zach, hey, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to do, Zach. I decided that I'll only get my haircut if Josh Pate does it himself next time he's in Ohio.
If he cuts your hair?
Yep. That's all I want. That's what I decided.
Well, we will see. We'll throw the offer out there.
Yeah. Since the donation stopped coming for my you know, haircut. I decided that I only want Josh Pate to cut it because I was worried about you getting a male stripper to cut my hair. It's really not conducive to my
brand. Let's not forget, Chris, you already signed the contract. You get no say now. Okay. No say. When that fund is up to an appropriate level, I will let you know how and when we're doing it.
All right. Good luck finding me.
That's all I got, though, Chris. Menace out.